For years and years, heating has meant boilers, and boilers have meant breakdowns. Over here and over here. Anything but music to your ears. At Fisher Future Heat, we create state-of-the-art home heating systems that we fit, then you forget. With no annual servicing needed and a huge 10-year guarantee. In short, we engineer common sense. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hey everybody, welcome to another filibuster edition of the Senate floor. We are doing this back-to-back recording. Lee and I just recorded a bonus filibuster where we talked about Lee's reaction to Batman versus Superman, which came out this week, and you'll be able to hear that on that episode. But here on this episode, on our main show, we're going to talk about going off of our cinema experiences and kind of going off of our Batman v Superman discussion. We're going to talk mainly about films that we've gone to see at the cinema that either we really anticipated and maybe didn't turn out as well as we'd like, versus going to films at the cinema that we either had mixed expectations or even no expectations for that blew us away, and kind of talk about films that surprised us in a good way and in a bad way. But we're going to try to keep it mostly positive here. And to kind of kick off things in this discussion, I'm going to talk about a film that I saw last weekend that has been getting excellent reviews, and so I was pretty excited to see it, but I was not expecting the quality of the film to be what it was. And it's the new children's animated film from Disney. In the America, it's called Zootopia, and I believe isn't it just being released now in the UK?
Came out a week ago, so just before Batman, just before the halftime break here.
Right, and in the UK, it's being called Zootropolis. I don't know why the name changed, but
no idea.
But they decided to rebrand it. But anyway, I went to go see Zootopia / Zootropolis last weekend. It's gotten, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's gotten something like a 99%, which is like that's setting the bar very high. And I'm going to say this: I was not expecting to be as entertained and thoroughly enjoying of the film as I was, because not only is it a very good kids movie, but it's not just for kids; it's for adults too. But what I think this movie does really well, and what I really admire it for, is that it tries to be kind of a morality tale, and a lot of kids' stories are morality tales, but this one deals specifically with prejudice and racism and stereotyping, and does so in a way that may seem a little heavy-handed, but that's because you're thinking your target audience is kids, so you got to be a little bit more brazen with your allegory than when you're talking to adults. But honest to God, if I had a child, or if I had a niece or a nephew and they were a small kid, I would love to show them this film just to teach them about these different aspects of society, because it does so in a way that's very thoughtful, very poignant, and very funny, but very heartfelt. So I was very, very impressed by Zootopia. I recommend kids go see it. I recommend adults go see it. You may not, you know, be as blown away by it as I was. Like I said, it may come across as a little heavy-handed, but it's such a good message, and it delivers it in such a great way that I think that it deserves the praise it's getting.
Very exciting. I'm definitely going to have to seek that. I might be seeing that tomorrow. So I had no expectations of seeing this movie until I started hearing all the good buzz. So people like you and some friends of mine have been recommending it. So I think I'm going to have to get myself along and see it.
I think it'll be safe to say, Lee, I think you'll feel much better about yourself and humanity than you did coming out of Batman versus Superman.
Oh, God, I know. Like, we spoke about before the show that we're going to do a little feature where we talk about things that we've maybe just seen lately, not do like a full episode on it, but just talk with you through, because we're always at the cinema, so telling you kind of maybe what we've seen and if there's something we've recommended. I mean, I've seen a few films since our last episode that I would really recommend. The Witch. I'm not a horror fan.
Oh, I want to see that.
Oh, Matt, it is one of the...
I am a horror fan, and I heard nothing but good things.
The tension is so fantastic. It's well shot. The cinematography is excellent. I really, really recommend it. It's been a really good month for films. That was excellent. Witch here, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
That was awesome.
Yep. I'm like, I know Jadzia Dax is your homegirl. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is
I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I always have. You know, going all the way back to Scott Pilgrim.
Exactly.
I even loved her. I know it wasn't the best received, but I loved her in The Thing prequel that came out.
She was excellent.
But I was so, so impressed with 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, I was fantastic. I think it's really tense. It's really funny. It's very dark. There was even the twist, which we're not going to touch. I think it's done really well. And I think the John Goodman's excellent. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is fantastic. If you love this movie with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I highly recommend Faults, starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead, where she plays a girl that has been taken to a hotel by a deprogrammer, but all is not as it seems. So I think 10 Cloverfield Lane would make an excellent double bill with that.
And talk about something that was so opposite of Batman versus Superman in the sense that we only knew it was coming out in January. And it was coming out 2 months later, and I'm like, what kind of film can do that? It'd be so secretive, and can it be any good with that level of you know, just pre-release buzz just being just 2 months? And wow. I mean, that is the best psychological thriller I've seen in years.
Yeah, and a few other films I'd recommend that I've seen in the past couple of weeks. I saw a double bill at my local film house of Fargo, which – everyone knows I love, but I got to see Kimiko the Treasure Hunter, which is a really good companion piece to Fargo, all about this woman that goes from Japan believing Fargo is quite literally true as she heads out to Fargo in America to find the hidden money. It's a really somber and sad movie. It's the cinematography is fantastic. The lead performance, I'm not even going to offend the woman by trying to pronounce her name, as Kimiko is fantastic. I've saw two films this week where I've only given one film this year 5 out of 5. That's Spotlight. I would give a 5 out of 5 to Anomalisa, the new Charlie Kaufman movie.
Yes.
A love story and movie about mental health with puppets. Think Team America, but via American art house. It is incredible. I mean, I've had an emotional reaction watching it, and I had to see it twice. It's so powerful, so I can't recommend that highly enough.
I do want to see that.
And I finally, it's been out here for a month, but it's been like shoved on at ridiculous times of the day. It's been here, there, and everywhere. I finally got to see Bone Tomahawk this month, this week.
How awesome is Kurt Russell?
Incredible. I had avoided the trailers for this movie, which is something I'm trying to do more and more. Unless it's the big movies, I'll actively watch the trailers. So I'm going into movies based on word of mouth and buzz and the cast. This movie was fantastic. It's a very, very slow burner. But that last 30 minutes, I had my hand over my mouth. I was in shock. I couldn't believe how violent, bloody, and excellent. If you see one Kurt Russell Western movie this year, Hateful Eight's good. This is great.
I love Kurt Russell. He's just one of those actors that, like, no matter what he does, whenever he pops up on screen, I get a little bit happier.
Yeah, he was very reserved in it. It's not your typical Kurt Russell performance. I think it's fantastic. Richard Jenkins steals the show as the deputy sheriff. For a movie that is so dark, bleak, and violent, they still manage to have fun. Who knew that was possible? And I'm so excited. Tomorrow I'm going to see one of my, you know, favorite, you know, what probably a classic kids film that friend of the show, Annika, introduced me to it many years ago, a movie called Ponyo. So I'm very excited to see that on the big screen tomorrow. Ponyo loves ham. I love Ponyo. So I'm going to go see that. It's a showing for mostly for kids and families. The woman informed me of that when I was getting the ticket, and I was like, I don't mind. Just, I can't wait to see Ponyo again on the big screen.
That's so awesome. So, I mean, that's just a small taste of what we're going to talk about today, which is films that surprised us in both good and bad ways. And if you've heard our show last time on Why We Love the Cinema, you know that Lee and I just love going to see a bunch of new releases that come out. And I got to say, since I've been going to the movies more and more these last couple of years that I've been working, I've had some genuine mm-hmm. surprises. Why don't you start off, Lee? What's one that comes to mind besides the ones that we talked about, Bone Tomahawk, yeah. 10 Cloverfield, that kind of like you thought may have looked interesting, but like when you walked out of that theater, you were just floored?
Yeah, I think one film that comes to mind, and anyone that gets the chance to talk to me knows how much I love the movie Frances Ha. I had no expectation going into that movie. I'm a fan of the director, and I saw the trailer and I thought, it looks quite funny. So I went along to see this movie. I had low expectations. I thought it was going to be good. Maybe, yeah, it's just going to be a movie. You know, when you see a lot of movies, you kind of go into a lot of movies thinking it's just going to be a movie that I'll see for a few hours, come out, that'll be there. But it really struck me quite emotionally. And I mentioned it in our podcast when we were discussing the joy of going to the movies. I'm searching for gold when I go to the cinema. When I see Man of Steel and, you know, Captain America, these movies, I know what I'm going in for. I'm expecting, you know, to enjoy myself. But what I'm really looking forward to when I go to the cinema is those special movies that I can share with my friends, that I can introduce them to the movies. Frances Ha kind of struck me at a kind of time that was a bit tough in my life. I was going through my quarter life crisis. You know, I was like 25, 26. I'd recently broken up with a girl I'd loved, and it had ended, you know, it all ended quite well, but, you know, this person was kind of now gone from my life. I had lived in Edinburgh for like 7-8 years at this point, and I was back home living with my parents because I'd taken up a new job, so I couldn't really see much of my friends anymore. So I was had a bit of a bleak day at work, and I kind of was thinking about some things, and I was like, I'm going to go see this movie. So it was shown at my local independent cinema up in Aberdeen, the wonderful Belmont Cinema. So if you ever get the chance to go there, it's so nice. Lovely staff, great cinema. So I went to see Frances Ha, and it was one of those movies that felt like I was watching my life. It was a story about this girl, Frances, who's going through a quarter-life crisis, and I could just relate to nearly everything she was experiencing in the movie. The beginning of the movie opens with her, like, breaking up with her boyfriend. They're both at different places in their life, and that's something that was kind of similar to what I had just kind of experienced. And, you know, they were living together then. Well, they weren't living together, but they were going to live together, and, like, all these expectations, and then they all just kind of fell apart, which is so common for people in their 20s. We all have such ambitions about the people we're with, ambitions about our jobs, that we don't think anything will ever kind of change, that this is what life is. But those mid-20s, they show you that that's not often the case. And I've never seen a better movie outside perhaps Richard Linklater movies for showing you what life is like at 20s than Frances Ha. Me and Tristan were discussing this quite recently, that like our generation can't really afford to buy homes. Like we're renting, we're moving all the time. By this stage in my life, from when I was 18 to like 25, 26, I'd stayed in like 6 or 7 different places while I was in Edinburgh. I was always kind of moving. I would make friends in flats, and then I would have to leave and I would have to start again and do all these different things. And that's what I've seen in this film. And it felt like it was really holding up a mirror to my life. And like this person is just, she knows what she wants to do, but she's not doing it. And I think that's something that speaks to a lot of our generation, that a lot of us have gone to uni and done things, and we have ambitions of what we want to do, but we're not actually doing them. We're doing jobs that aren't what we dreamt of doing. We're in relationships that aren't perhaps the relationship that we thought it was going to be. It was all these things that I was watching the movie and I was like, man, this is kind of my life. It's like that kind of mess and indecision and not having a place or a person that you can call your own or your home at the time. And I just, this film was so powerful. And like the end that she finally gets her life together, and you know, she achieves a little bit of success that we're all looking for when we're like in our 20s. We're not looking, our expectations are so kind of lowered these days that we're not like our parents' generation where we're getting houses, we're getting married. I'm 29 on Tuesday. I'm not remotely close to married, and I'm pretty sure my parents had me around this age. They were married by this age. They owned a house, but they were owned their second house by this age. Like, I don't have that. And I'm just looking for that little success in my life, something that I can say is my own, that I'm happy in my job. And that's something that this movie shows really well. It's not, it doesn't overly dramatize it. It plays it really well and plays it with a smile that this is a character that through this film, she's moving from flat to flat. She even lives with Kylo Ren at one point, who's the ultimate New York hipster, who has the famous line that she's really poor and she's struggling to pay the rent. And these two guys are artists, and they have this famous line that the only people that can afford to be artists are rich kids. And I, there's so many just lovely, iconic moments. And it was a film that I, even when I came out of it, I looked at my Letterboxd, which is a website where you can, you know, rate and date the films you saw. And I gave it 4 out of 5 when I came out. But for me, a film, and we've discussed it so many times, is one that's got replay value that you can watch over and over again. And Frances Ha was that for me, that I've watched that movie maybe 10 times in the past 2 years. I've recommended it to friends who've really enjoyed it, really connected with it. And like, that's the kind of film I'm always looking to get. Like, I may tweet and get most excited about the new Captain America or the new Star Trek movie. But that's because these films haven't entered my life yet. And I know that they're going to be the ones that are going to always play my mind. And I was feeling a bit like glum a few weeks ago, and I just put it on. And even though it's kind of shows how tough life is at the 20s, it can also be wonderfully like reassuring in life. And like you look at that and think there's hope. And if you keep like this woman, no matter what goes wrong, she keeps her chin up and things kind of work out in the end. And that's a message that I think a lot of us in our 20s are kind of searching for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really look forward to seeing it, because the way you described it just sounds incredible. And you mentioned something in there that reminds me of not a theatrical experience I had, but certainly experience with a movie that I had heard so many good things about, and I didn't know if it would be my cup of tea or not, but I because a podcast that I listened to was reviewing it about a year ago, I decided to give it a try. And I've kind of talked about this on the Senate floor, but I'll talk about it here because it's the first thing that springs to mind with movies that just blew me away. And it's the Richard Linklater Before trilogy.
Oh man, I'm so glad you mentioned this.
I swear to God, I had not seen these movies until last January.
Oh wow.
And so someone was reviewing them, and so I decided to pick them up, and I watched the first one, and I'm like, never before have I seen a movie where like people talk, you know, just people just talking about life. Was the most captivating thing that I've ever seen on screen. And it's cliche because to say that, you know, that's exactly like how my dates have gone, but it's true. And just watching both Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, the chemistry that they had on screen and the things they talked about, I saw so much of myself in those conversations, and I got so emotionally invested that when I went through the other two films, I felt like I was sharing their lives in a way. And I really do think I mentioned this on a Senate floor I did. It's my favorite on-screen relationship.
Like, I'm so glad you said that. Like, I had ambitions one day that we would actually, and you know, maybe even in the future we will do like a full episode on this, but I love that trilogy. I can actually give you a few anecdotes about that. And I actually saw, and I you know, it could be an interesting idea. I've got a picture of me at 17 years old, maybe 18, and I've got that Before Sunset poster just behind me.
Really?
In my room. Yeah, I'm going to send it your way. And I love those movies. Like, when I was 17, I discovered Before Sunset because I saw the poster. And I thought, I really liked it. And I liked Ethan Hawke. So I went along to see it. And I was blown away. Like, I love these characters. I'd not seen Before Sunrise. I just had this movie. And, like, it was just so powerful. It was, I just love, there's so many little moments and beats in it. Mm-hmm. So I remembered, I ended up getting Before Sunrise on an imported DVD because it wasn't available in the UK at the time. And I watched it and I was like, oh my God, this film really spoke to me. Because at that time, you felt like, I was in my teens when I first saw this Before Sunrise, for example. And it really connected with me, like, oh man, these people are talking like how I want to talk with women. That, like, Ethan Hawke has that swagger and charm of, like, a young, youthful man. And that's how you view relationships at the time, as, like, really intense. Like, you talk and you talk and you talk. And, like, you share so many experiences. And I was like, wow, this film's amazing. So I remember going on a date when I was 17 on Valentine's Day. I can't remember what we were going to do, but I was going on this date. So I bought the girl, not Tristan's girl, I must add, but I bought this girl the double bill set of Before Sunrise and Before Sunset.
Sunset, yeah.
And her and her friend thought it was the funniest movies. Like, they thought it was so serious and pretentious, and they famously, it became an in-joke between us in our 6 year at high school, where they would do the I am the cow joke. They just thought it was really quite pretentious. And probably in retrospect, a boy giving a girl these DVDs, like, when you're 17, probably comes across as quite pretentious, like, I'm so deep, I'm giving you these DVDs to understand my depth of love. So, and, like, I love those movies. And when I saw Before Midnight, it was quite a similar time to when I saw Frances Ha. Funnily enough, my top two films of that year were Frances Ha and Before Midnight. And Before Midnight, I love it, but not as much as the other two. But I think in time that's going to change, because I'm not at the age or position in my life that I am, that they are. Like, I've done the jaded 20s thing where, like, you're, like, with Before Sunset, like, we've all been like that in our 20s, where we fall so intensely in love that we're willing to throw everything away for one girl. And, you know, I could relate to that at the time. And, like, I was like, oh, there was this girl I loved in my 20s. And, like, I felt that same intensity that I would do what Ethan Hawke did. I would, like, throw everything away to be with this girl. And, but with Before Midnight, I'm not married or close to married, or I've not been in that thing where I've been in a relationship where I've got kids. But with Before Midnight, I found it quite emotional and tough, because I've been so invested in these characters, and it's like seeing your best friends fight, but it's so brutal and honest that even if I've not been married, any person that's been in a long-term relationship, they can't say they've never had that fight where someone they've loved, and they're saying things that aren't overly pleasant to that person. And when you start,
what I love about it too is that it's not a Hollywood movie couple no. fight. It feels like this is a real, like, this relationship is ending kind of fight.
And that's horrible. And, like, I watched this movie not long after, like, me and my girlfriend at the time, we kind of parted ways. She moved to another country and I moved back home. And I was kind of in that mindset. And I went to, like, it came out on the Friday that I was leaving Edinburgh. So I was quite emotional. And I just didn't have the time to see it opening day. So I saw it on the Monday at, like, 11 o'clock in the morning. And there was only me and one other person in the cinema. And I was just watching this film, and I was quite emotional, because I was related to that. I was like, I'd felt like I'd thrown away, like, a really good relationship at the time. Uh-huh. And I'm watching this film, like, I'm like, I don't want to see this happen with these characters. And it's kind of left a bit ambiguous towards the end. Like, they've sat down and they're watching the sun go down. Is that the sun going down on the relationship? Or are they going to be, like, all the best couples that they endure all the bumps and still keep going? And that scene where they're in the bedroom fighting, it's just anyone that's been in a relationship, we may all have had the best relationships in the world, but we've all had that moment where we're in a bedroom and things that have started as like a normal romantic night escalate into something bigger and deeper.
Yes.
And you're being brutally honest with someone. You're tearing someone apart that, if you think back to the beginning of this trilogy, you wouldn't ever think, wow, these people would say such cruel things to each other. But we've all done that, where we turn to someone we say we love and we know we love, and we say like shit things to them, like about them and what we really think about them and what we've done in the relationship dreamed at the beginning.
What really pisses you off about them?
Yeah, like you wouldn't dream of saying, you know, life's shit, but this is real life. At the beginning, it's like the first two movies. Everything's Hollywood romance. Then life kicks in that, like, sometimes we see it with so many relationships where the girl takes off the glasses and they kiss and they live happily ever after. That's not real life. Real life with a relationship is mundane, is sacrifices, almost at times resenting someone that you love for something that you've got to compromise on. That's real life, but there's still greatness in it. And it's, do you fight for that greatness that's still in a relationship, or do you go with the bickering and end it at that? It's how much are you willing to fight for it? And I could watch those films over and over again, and I'm looking forward to when I'm potentially their age and 40 watching that movie and going, well, I'm glad my life didn't turn out like that. But I have a feeling, you know, hopefully I'm not a divorcee or something, but I reckon I'll relate a lot more to that movie when I'm 40 than I would now.
Yeah, that's true, and I think that's the beauty of why those films are going to be timeless, is because those films are snapshots of people's lives at different points in their lives. So,
have you ever seen 2 Days in Paris and 2 Days in New York?
No, that's the ones with Julie Delpy, right?
Yeah. Julie Delpy is a bit similar to the Before trilogy, where it's about her in a relationship and it's in Paris and New York. It's a lot more funnier, and I was really lucky enough a good few years ago to see Julie Delpy here in Edinburgh at the film festival, and I was just looking at her going, oh my god, that's Celine, she's right there. Oh, I couldn't believe it. And I was just in awe of this woman. I love her, and I really love these movies. And with most films, I wouldn't think, I don't want to see another sequel for this movie, but with this, if they make another one in 10 years time, I'd love to see.
I've got to know if they made up at the, because the Before Midnight ends so ambiguously. It's like they might get back together permanently. They might just spend the night together and part ways the next day.
Yeah, but like you look at the other ones as well. Like how the first one ends. Like, do they meet up?
Yeah,
and we find out later they didn't. At the end, does Jesse throw away his marriage for this girl singing?
Yes,
he does. Like,
and does that? But does that make him happy? No.
Yeah, like, I think us men think things are always going to be so simple that sometimes, like, what we see with Before Midnight that we don't see that is that sometimes, like, life is about that settling and putting up with, like, enduring the tough times because you love someone, and not, like he did, throwing something away for a girl singing. And are they any happier for being together, or were they just happy in that honeymoon period, and are they willing to work through the shit and the things that they've said and done to each other? And maybe we'll find out in, what, 8 years' time? Maybe we won't, but it's just such a perfect trilogy.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I kind of hope there's another one, but I'd be fine if there wasn't, because they're perfect the way they are. I have mixed feelings, but if there's another one, I'll see it, definitely.
Yeah, I'll be there opening day, and I'd love to know where they are in their lives and where I am in my life when this movie comes out, and that excites me, and who knows.
Okay, so we talked about a couple of films that blew us away with our expectations. Now let's go to the other side of the coin. And Lee, I know online you've talked about Spectre, and you've talked about other films that didn't quite live up to your hype. But aside from those, does anything else spring to mind that we haven't talked about before?
Yeah, like, I always think of, you know, Phantom Menace is the classic letdown movie. But do you know what? There's something I love that it was a failure. I listen to it, like, I watch it and I think, that's really quite, it's like, it is a bad movie, but there's something so fascinating about the hype to that movie that even though it was terrible, it still sticks with me as an important movie. Like, when we think back to 1999, people were queuing in the street for tickets. People were, like, camping out for days. People were having to download the trailer for hours on, like, dial-up broadband. People were having to go to the cinema just to see the trailer. The film is a special place in our history. And I remember being so hyped for this movie. I couldn't wait. I remember then seeing it and, like, oh, my God, this movie's terrible. But I kept giving it other chances. I bought it on video with some birthday money. I then bought it on DVD. I saw the 3D re-release. I've always known the film's terrible. And it was, like, one of the biggest letdowns ever as a kid. Like, new Star Wars. Oh, my God. Like, the trailer was amazing. I had the toys. I had everything. But, like, in a way, it was a letdown. But in a way, it wasn't that. I think of so many things that film's generated that I debated that movie with so many fans. People aren't fans. I watched the Red Letter Media Phantom Menace reviews. I listened to a podcast just now that's breaking down the movie 1 minute at a time. Like, even though it was a letdown, I still think it's historically important. I think it's the best of the prequels by a bit of imagination. But, like, even though it was a huge letdown, I still enjoy looking back at the time. I was watching a documentary recently where it was interviewing people that were queuing for The Phantom Menace. And the Star Trek fans came along and were trolling them, like, dressed as Star Trek characters, holding up signs and, like, just trying to wind up the Star Wars fans while they were queuing up. And, like, you think back, you wouldn't get that these days. Nowadays, it would just be Star Wars fans and Star Trek fans tweeting at each other. But, like, there's something so romantic about that movie still, that even though it was a disaster, like, this part of the charm of film big releases these days is missing. Think of Batman v Superman. We saw everything with the trailers. Like, the internet meant that it's been dissected for years. But with that movie, it was like the last of the great blockbusters before the internet came along. And, you know, you could book tickets online so you weren't queuing up. You could do all these different things back in those days. Now it's, we can watch the Civil War trailer over and over and over. We can do a podcast about it and release it around the world. Back then, people had to pay like $10 to see Meet Joe Black to see it. So even though it was a disaster of a movie, like, and it let me down hugely, that hype was still a special experience.
Yeah, it's one of the most fascinating failures in cinema history, I think, just because of the hype around it and the expectations and years of dissection. I mean, if you've ever seen, there's a wonderful documentary that I recommend. I just saw it this year when Force Awakens was coming out, called The People versus George Lucas.
Oh yeah, it's on Netflix. It's really good.
Is it on Netflix? Okay.
Yeah.
They have a whole section dedicated to the lead up to episode one and the interviews, the hype, all that stuff. And then, you know, the reaction afterward, shall we say. And it is like, you know how they there's that famous expression of like, you know, watching a train wreck and it's, you can't look away because it's just so fascinating.
Yeah.
It's one of those kinds of things. Like,
yeah,
you want to know, like, everything that went wrong.
Yeah, like, it spawned so much fan. Like, that film came out just shy of what? Like, it's over 15 years ago that film came out. Like, that's a lifetime ago. It's crazy to think how much time passed.
Actually, like, in 2 months, it'll be 17 years.
Yeah, like, that is, and it's such a, like, it's an easy time to romanticize that era of what it was like to be a film fan, that there will be no film more hyped in history than that movie, and there'll be no film that disappointed more in history than that. But that doesn't really matter anymore. Like, I hated it as a kid. I don't like it as an adult, but I can enjoy it ironically and kind of, like, yeah, it is what it is, but I enjoy everything that's gone along with it, that the baggage of the movie, and that's kind of, like, the charm of it. Like, I can watch the Red Letter Media film reviews over and over. I can quote them over and over. And I just love hearing fans talk about what did they think at the time? Like, how did it match up for them? How many times did they go to the cinema? Were they in denial? Was it straight away like, oh my God, this is a bad movie? The hype didn't match up to the product, but what it's done is left a kind of, you know, effect on all of us fans that there will be never be a film like The Phantom Menace again.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, for sure. That's a great pick. I wish I could say that I could think of one right off the top of my head that was big budget that truly, truly let me down. Mm-hmm. But the one that came to mind when we were talking about this, if you've heard me on the Senate floor and if you've heard me on any other podcast that I've been a part of, you know that I'm a big horror fan. Mm-hmm. And specifically, my favorite horror film, I've said it time and time again, is the original John Carpenter Halloween. Uh-huh. I just think that movie is you know, as cliche as slashers have become, I think that one is perfection because it hits all the right beats. So I can remember way back when I was just 18 years old. The remake of Halloween was coming out, the Rob Zombie one in 2007. I don't know if you remember it coming out or not.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So when that was being announced, you know, I'm 18 at the time. And so I don't have this, like, hatred of remakes yet, or, like, the remakes aren't as good mentality yet. I did have some of that, but not – I always try to be optimistic, right? So in the months leading up to that, I was – getting kind of excited because the previews were coming out and it looked scary. It looked like it was a different vibe, but it was the story that I loved, and it's getting remade for a new generation. Of course I'm going to go see it. I went with, you know, I watched the old films. I was getting myself really hyped up. I went with a friend to go see it on opening day, and I go see the film, and it was one of those films with, like, within 5 minutes, like, of watching it, I'm like, oh my God, everything I loved about the first film is not in this film. The vibe is all wrong. It's all wrong. And it's just, it went for this, you know, white trash vibe, and I'm like, that's not the point of Halloween. Halloween was the film that took place in nice suburbia, and the what was so scary about it is that, you know, it could be any town, it could be your town, it could be my town, that this mass murderer got loose in. And, you know, not only did it go for the wrong vibe, it started over explaining motives and took away all the suspense and just substituted it in for brutality. And even when I was 18 and open to loving films, like, because you're not as critical of films as you are when you're older, and your movie senses are more sophisticated, I would say. But even walking out of that, I was just like, I was depressed, and it was not the feeling that I thought I was going to get walking out of that film. Now, of course, being a completionist and being that I love the series so much, of course I've bought the box set, and it's in the box set, and I've watched it again. I've watched it several times, even though it's not a particular favorite of mine. And I've kind of, it's almost like the same thing you described with The Phantom Menace, in that I watch it and I think there's bits and pieces here that could work. But, you know, I watch it to try to, like, analyze, okay, what exactly went wrong with this?
Yeah.
And that was one of those experiences that, more than anything, I think stuck with me for the long run.
Yeah, like, that's part of, like, the joy of being a geek, is sometimes that when things go wrong, you feel like you put on the lab coat and you're just sitting there watching it, like, going, like, oh, you're analyzing it. And even the worst geek movies, there's still something that we can mine from it, that even when we've been disappointed, we want to learn, why did it fail? Why did it fail us?
Right.
You touched on it with Spectre, that there was no film more last year that I was excited for than Spectre, more than Star Wars by some stretch. Anyone that knows me knows how much I love Bond. And I remembered when the trailer, the embargo broke here. And the reviews in the UK were, there were some really good ones, but a lot of it was quite average. I was like, and I did what a lot of people seem to be doing with Batman v Superman this weekend, is like, wait, like, why are the critics doing that? Like, I was trying to put my mind in the head, because, like, wait, I've seen the footage for this movie. Like, this looks like one of the best movies ever. by Bond standards.
Right.
And then I remembered going into the cinema undeterred. I couldn't wait to see this movie. And I'm watching it, and it starts well, and then things start going wrong, and then it kind of comes back a bit right, and then the middle was a mess, and I just start going, oh man, I'm not enjoying this movie. I don't think it's that good. I remember coming out of the film, and I was like, to the people I went with, I was like, it's okay. I don't think I liked it that much. So then I kind of spent a few days just like, oh, did I? And then I thought, I came out first, and I was like, oh, that was really good. And then like a few hours later, I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. And there's just that moment in your head where the denial is just starting to fade and you're accepting it for what it's what it was. So I saw a couple more times and I enjoyed it a bit more, but like, I more accepted the problems with the film. I'm actually next in a 2 weeks time, I'm down in London,
mm-hmm.
and it's my birthday next week. So I decided, I was like, I'm going to go to London for a few days, just go myself, and I'm just going to go see Hans Zimmer live. I'm going to just go do a few things myself, just have a good time. So I decided to treat myself that I booked a table, a special table. I booked the same table that M sits at, Inspector, when they go to his favorite restaurant. It's a restaurant called Rules in London near Covent Garden.
Right.
So I called them up and I was like, can I book a table for 1 o'clock on the Thursday? And I was like, can I sit at the table that they sat at Inspector? And they went, yeah, we'll do our best. We'll book that in. And even though the film was a crushing disappointment, and I think it's ended the Daniel Craig era, there's still elements of that movie that I can go out and have a bit of fun with, that I'm going to go sit at that table only based on it being Inspector. Like, the menu's a bit expensive, but it's just still part of the fun that even though the film let me down, I'm still going to find something as a fan to get out of it. And it's about sometimes letting that hype, even though it's something's let you down, there's still stuff that you can get out as a fan. There's still stuff you can salvage, I think. And like, that's the same with Spectre. It's not going to have the replay value of License to Kill, GoldenEye and Skyfall, but I can still get a kick out of it. And that's the best that I can maybe get out of that movie.
Right. I mean, I wasn't nearly as let down as you were.
Yeah.
Although, like I said, I knew even walking out of it, I'm like, I liked that more than Quantum, but I'm not getting those Skyfall highs that I walked out of that film. We've gone on a little bit here. Why don't we wrap up with kind of talking about maybe a big – we talked a little bit about small budget. We talked mm-hmm. a little bit kind of briefly on big budget. Why don't we talk about, like, to end on a note of positivity, one of these – bigger budget films maybe we didn't have any expectations for that absolutely floored us. I think that's a nice light way of going out.
I can think of Mad Max Fury Road as a most recent history one. Like, when it was announced, I've no real emotional investment or connection to Mad Max. So when I went to see the movie, well, when I heard about the movie, I was like, yeah, okay, big deal. When the trailer started coming out, I was like, holy hell, this looks nuts. I went to see it in IMAX and I was just blown away. The soundtrack, the visuals, the story, the imagery, the cinematography, everything blew me away. It was one of the best films I saw last year, and it has screwed every action movie from then onwards. That is what they've got to compete with. Do you think the Fast and Furious franchise looks at Mad Max and thinks, oh no, we're in trouble? They think, how do we learn from this and do better? Like Batman v Superman, this movie comes out a few months after that, a movie that revolutionized action scenes, adventure and adrenaline, and the movie falls short. Like, every movie in the next few years is going to be measured up against Mad Max Fury Road. And a lot of that comes from, no one really had much in the way of expectations for Mad Max Fury Road until the trailers came out. So Mad Max Fury Road, I've seen it 3 times at the cinema, and I just love it each time. It is just nuts. And I love that. Like, and I might remind you that this is from the guy who directed Babe 2, Happy Feet, who was even linked with doing a Justice League movie a good few years ago. And fans were negative about this guy. I bet all the people that have come out of Batman v Superman this week.
Yeah, they want this guy back now.
Right, let's get George Miller. I hope everyone is sending flowers to George Miller's house going, please, please save us. He could be the J.J. Abrams to this franchise. It's Mad Max Fury Road blew me away, and if I get the chance to see it at the cinema, I would always take it. I saw it again recently, and I'd love to see it again and again. It's just such a visceral, unique explosion of a movie, and I love it. I feel like I'm just throwing cliches at it, but it really lives up to all those tired things that people say about like boring movies. This is nuts.
Right. I kind of had a similar experience with that, and it goes back to my very, 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 very first nerd party / Senate floor back in the summer of 2014. I mean, we were having a good year that year, at least I was in terms of geeks, because that was the year that Winter Soldier came out, and you know my feelings about that. That was also the year that X-Men Days of Future Past came out. So it was a great summer so far, but then we get to July, and that year, that July, that's when Dawn of the Planet of the Apes came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that year I had only seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I hadn't seen any of the other old ones. And so right before I went to go see Dawn, I watched the old films and really kind of got into the universe. I mean, I can't believe as a sci-fi fan that I hadn't seen them yet. But I did. And so I went into Dawn with kind of like, I hope this is good. I mean, the reviews came out and they were amazing. And so I'm like, I really hope that this is good. And I walked out of it and I'm like, I think I just saw my favorite movie of the summer. And it was like it was one of those things where like I had no idea that I would feel that way coming out of that film.
Yeah, like I had a similar feeling when I went to see Rise of the Planet of the Apes, what, 2011, 12?
Yeah.
Like no one expected this movie was going to be good. Even when the trailers were coming out, people went, this doesn't look very good. And I remember taking my girlfriend along. And, like, we weren't really hyped for it. I think I had to really drag her along. And we watched it, and it was like, oh, wow, this is great. And, like, I don't think anyone expected that. Like, I kind of was going along, like, yeah, I liked the franchise. And, you know, I wasn't a big fan. And, like, I watched the movie, and I was like, even James Franco wasn't annoying. And, like, wow, this is really good. And that performance by Andy Serkis is amazing. And I was lucky enough to bump into him one time down in London.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'll send you a photo. I went to the Albert Hall for the Star Trek 09 live show. And I was standing in the foyer. And he was chatting with someone. And the person he was chatting to turned around and went, oh, could you take a photo of us? And I went, wow, sure. Yeah, I'll take a photo. But can you take a picture of us too as well? So I'll send you a wee photo of that. But yeah, like I was like, oh, you're brilliant. You know, you're like a genius. Like, you know, it's like you're just throwing superlative at the guy. Like, I just like I said that, and I was like, oh, I'm pretty terrible at saying anything around a celebrity. I just keep my mouth shut. But I just had to tell him he was brilliant. And it's such a revolutionary series, and I cannot wait to see War of the Planet of the
Apes? War for the Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
Yeah, like a title like that alone. I can't wait.
And
show me a trailer. Just say War of the Planet of the Apes. War. I'm there.
And they've already, like, they've got me with the story, and they've got me with the casting, because, of course, the apes are coming back. But one of the leads in this film is Woody Harrelson, and I freaking love Woody Harrelson.
He's brilliant. I don't know what kind of performance we'll get from him, but... Hey.
He can do drama. I know he can do drama. But... just walking out of that theater from Dawn, I saw that I don't think I saw it more times than I saw Winter Soldier, but that was one that definitely got repeat business from me. I was just so amazed, like thoroughly amazed.
Yeah, and that's what like we've spoke about. We spoke about, you know, many a time. We go to the cinema. Yeah, we'll do big episodes about Captain America, Star Wars, all these things, and that's what people talk about. But we go along to be surprised. People that go frequently, like, that's what we're finding, is looking for those special movies, looking for that surprise movies where we turn around to someone and go, this is brilliant, or wow, I didn't expect that. And like, that's what going to the cinema once again, and I hope that's a recurring theme in the show, is like, go to the cinema, go see films. Like, this is what you get that's so special. It's not as, it's such a buzz to find a surprise movie, to have those expectations fulfilled or surprised. And I love it. I'm sure I'll see films plenty more in the coming weeks and months that surprise me. And, you know, I'll do my best to let you know about it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's going to probably do it for our discussion here. But if you want to follow us, where we talk about movies constantly, you could probably get movie recommendations for us. I'm at mhanson0207 on Twitter. Lee, how can they reach you?
Yeah, they can find me at Lee_Nostromo. And if you're looking for other movie recommendations, you and Tristan have the Senate Floor podcast, where you discuss your lists. So that's a really good way of, you know, you listen to some of your guys' lists. And I was recently listening to your episode about projects and development, and I'm already writing a list of some of these I want to see, though I need to have a word with you about your comments about The Prestige. Tristan and his wife have a great podcast, Nerd Nuptial, where they talk about films that are really special to them. I'm sure you get a got lot of recommendations from them.
Are you going to hear a lot of Star Wars news on aggressive negotiations with Rogue One and Episode 8 in development?
Exactly. Like, even though your money is probably guaranteed for those movies, I'm sure they'll do a good job of hyping you up, or even telling you about Star Wars things like Star Wars Rebels and Civil Wars that you may never have watched. So, yeah, there's a lot of this on the Nerd Party Network to check out and get recommendations from.
For sure. Thank you so much for joining us for this another film episode of The Filibuster. We just love talking about the cinema here, and we will see you all next show.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
I'm Tom, co-founder of the Warner Edwards Distillery. We've won HSBC's Elevator Pitch Competition, helping us to expand and grow our company. We're passionate about our business, and it's great to see HSBC is too.
We approved 89% of business loans in 2015, and with £10 billion to lend to small businesses in 2016, find out how HSBC could help take your business to the next level. Search HSBC Business Bank. Based on lending approvals in 2015 for loans up to £300,000, subject to credit status.